Before we start the show, I wanted to let you know about the free videos available at triplinear.com. Please take a moment to check them out and then fill out a super quick and confidential survey so I can create a better show for you. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to The New Man, Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier.
What is the difference between pleasure and enjoyment? What habit is the quickest ticket to a depressing life? And how can you become an optimist without being full of shit? This is part two of our talk on positive psychology with Philosopher's Notes creator Brian Johnson. Join us as we lay out the fundamentals to having a fulfilling life. Talking about focus or attention as psychic energy. And when I read that, I was able to see like, oh yeah, that's why I feel drained actually after I've been watching television too long or screwing around on the internet too long. I actually feel like bleh. And when it made the correlation between psychic energy or just energy, like, you know, where is my energy going and my focus, it helped me see like, oh, that is a waste of energy. I actually feel like shit from doing that stuff. And go ahead.
Well, it's just amazing, right? And then he also talks about the idea that people feel the best when they're at work, ironically, because they actually, that's when they can get into flow most often, because it has a greater likelihood of having goals that they're working toward, which absorb them, their attention, and they actually feel good when they're engaged in an activity.
Let's clarify what it means to feel best, right? Because some people are like, well, shit, you know, on the weekend when I'm partying my ass off, that's when I feel best. But we're talking about something deeper, right?
Yeah, and he differentiates between, I actually didn't talk about this in the note, but he differentiates between pleasure and enjoyment. So pleasure is what you just described. Yeah, you know, I had a great time with the buddies and whatever, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? Or, you know, enjoying a nice meal, that'd be pleasurable, you know, a bottle of wine or a glass of wine or whatever it is. There's pleasure to that.
Yeah.
But there's a difference he articulates between pleasure and enjoyment. Pleasure is kind of the, yeah, I had a great time and I woke up with a hangover mm-hmm. rather, right?
Like, yeah.
That's just not sustainable, and it doesn't build on itself. Versus enjoyment, you do it and it actually builds on itself, right?
Yeah.
There's a positive upward flow to it. So that's kind of pleasure versus enjoyment. And
got it.
The way he did his test was he had people carry pagers around and he'd buzz them at different times and they'd report their level of well-being from whatever it was, 1 to 7 or something. And so it was a self-reported, how do you feel? And in self-reporting, people described feeling better at work. And the thing that he differentiated was is that at work, you're more often to have a clear intention, which aligns your psychic energy, your attention, and you get into flow more often. Versus most people never do anything that's kind of constructive or intentional in their leisure time. They're vegging out, watching TV, a very passive activity, which is correlated with mild depression, you know, and they just don't feel good. It's a numbing outness. And it's denying that impulse to kind of express ourselves.
Yeah.
But what he said that really struck me was, although we feel better when we're at work, we rarely want to be at work as a society. And we want more leisure time, although we rarely feel good when we're at leisure. So it's this amazing irony and paradox of our society of just not having any clue of what actually makes us feel good and kind of having it literally backwards. The whole point that he's making is the same reason why we meditate. This is Bill Harris's, you know, I'm a big fan of HoloSync and I've done that for 30 days in a row now. I'm really excited to be almost at my year point. But his book, Thresholds of the Mind, what he's talking about and why we meditate is that it harmonizes our mind. Usually, and we feel good when our mind is harmonized.
Yeah.
Usually our brain, you know, right and left brains are lateralized and they're kind of chaotic. They're in entropy. So anything that brings our minds into a state of synchronization feels good, right? And watching TV passively doesn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, meditating does. Being engaged in a great conversation like this does. Listening to this attentively does. You know, climbing a rock does. Putting together a business plan and not allowing distractions to come in like internet or phone calls does. So the whole idea here is just find ways that you can align your energy in a straight way in integrity. You know, it's beautifully simple.
And that's that sweet spot. That's flow, is when we're not bored and we're not anxious, that we're in that place where we're engaged And we actually can, and when we get meaning into that place, that's where it's really happening. That's where it's really clicking. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And we, of course, we can talk about any one of these ideas for a weekend.
Yeah, you know? Like, I know.
And I want
so
to.
We're going quick. But yeah, I know. Then it comes back to, well, what can we do now? You know, we can take the strengths assessment. We can, I'm a huge fan of doing the fundamentals. This is all cool, but it's still kind of abstract. And we need to make sure we've got our fundamentals nailed of proper nutrition, proper exercise, and whatever other things we say are important, and then build on that platform, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I want to just preface it out there for those guys out there. This is not an invitation to another burden, okay? This is not like more shit to pile on your plate. This is a pathway for you to find out what can actually help you live the most optimal life, where you're fired up, where you're experiencing flow throughout the day. See if you can see it from that perspective and not like, oh shit, one more thing to do. So I invite you to take that perspective. So what are these fundamentals? What can we start to, let's dive into that more.
Yeah, well, this is what's not discussed, from my understanding, yet in the positive psychology movement so far, which is one of the reasons why I never got my PhD, was that there wasn't something comprehensive enough. Because I think it all starts with our physical being. We've got to have proper nutrition. We've got to have movement. We've got to have proper rest. If those things are out of sync, it's really hard to feel psychologically grounded and emotionally full. It's just really tough because our chemistry is going to be off. And it's just, I hate to say it's impossible, but I think it's impossible.
It's awesome that you take such a stand for doing those things, because so many guys are like stuck in their heads and like, well, I've got this idea, therefore it should be easy to kind of knock out. But you're saying, man, your body is so important that if you don't take care of the body in those ways, you don't really have a chance.
No, you don't even have a chance for averageness, I don't think. You know, I mean, for an average level, you have a very good chance for averageness, but for an average level of, for in fact, guaranteed, an average level of, you know, happiness, right, is still going to be hard, let alone an actual consistent level of happiness. So yeah, to me, it's an experienced thing, you know, and I come from a line of dads who drink too much, you know, and just seeing what happens when that goes on, and just everything that kind of falls around that. And it's just, for me, just become a very clear thing of this is, these few things need to be in place, and it's not complicated, but moving consistently, you know, and eating doesn't need to be like rock star clean diet. Ideally, we're moving toward what feels best for us, but removing the stuff we know is toxic, you know?
Yeah.
Getting consistent sleep, getting rid of the caffeine and realizing that's just your body telling you need more rest, you know, and whether we're an entrepreneur or we're passionate about being a dad or whatever it is, an athlete, like it just makes no sense to not take care of that first and foremost.
Okay. So get a good body practice. Okay. So go ahead.
Yes. Foundation, right? And then what's cool to see what they're studying, things like a gratitude journal. They've done research on the fact that if you just keep a gratitude journal that you write in once a week, the things that you're grateful for, you'll be, I don't have the stat in front of you, like 10, 20, 25% happier just by simply keeping track of things you're grateful for. And this is a scientific study where they split people in two groups, one that does this and gratitude work and one that doesn't, and measure them on their level of happiness X days into the experiment. Right?
Yeah.
The group that did simply one activity of gratitude a week, right, was significantly and scientifically happier than the group that didn't.
Wow.
Well, that would be an example of a fundamental that we want to embrace and build into our lives, you know?
Dude, that gratitude kept showing up over and over and over again in all the notes that you sent me. It was just like, oh, there it is again. Gratitude is like the core, it seems like, of this whole practice.
Yeah. And then you actually hit on it too of, I think the core that I'm almost getting embarrassed to write every time, because I've done 86 of these notes now, right? I'm going to do 100 of them, you know, as my master's project. So I've done 87. I'm almost getting embarrassed by writing the same exact thing as one of the first big ideas, which is the idea of taking control of your life. So a big aspect, realizing you're in control. And you said, hey guys, don't look at this as another burden. Look at it as an opportunity to figure out your ideal life. And the fundamental rule number one is that it's Stephen Covey's habit number one, be proactive. You can't be a victim. And Martin Seligman, before he wrote Authentic Happiness, he wrote a book called Learned Optimism, which is a great book. And before that, he spent a decade or something studying learned helplessness, right? So this idea that we need to get out of a helpless mode where we're screwed, we're overwhelmed, we can't change our lives. That's the quickest ticket to depression that you could ever get.
Yeah.
So the first step is realizing that you can shape your life the way you want to shape it. And you might be further away than you than you want to be, but fine. You are where you are. That's cool. Accept it and then take responsibility for the next step and the next step and the next step, and know that as we do that, we can get closer and closer to our ideal. So that idea of gratitude is huge, and appreciating what we have and taking responsibility. And psychologists call that your locus of control. And you can either have a locus of control that's internal or external. If it's external, you're bitching about a bad economy right now. You're bitching about a bad childhood. You're complaining about things outside of you.
Right.
Right. A bad weather day influences your day. Well, if that's true, we can bring you into a lab, and I guarantee you that person will be less happy than someone who has an internal locus of control, which is, I'm responsible for my state of well-being. I can't control the economy. I can't control the weather. Obviously can't control my childhood I had. But I can control, as Csikszentmihalyi says, the contents of my consciousness. I can control how I define and how I explain the economy and the weather and the childhood. I can look for the good as an optimist, not a kind of pie in the sky, out of control optimist, but just as a healthy, functioning human being, and see the best that exists in the world. And that is echoed literally by every teacher across everything that I've ever read. And if we don't do that, then, you know, there's no way to really consistently move forward.
And this is different than the guy that is like, you know, oh, it's obviously raining outside, and the guy's like, it's sunny today. You know, it's like, yep. No, it's not. I mean, he's full of shit. Yep. He's actually lying. His inner locus is lying to himself. So, but it is about getting
the
real.
The bullshit locus of control, yeah.
Yeah, the bullshit's running the story. Right. So, yeah, but there's kind of, can you talk a little bit about like the difference between having a positive outlook and like bullshitting yourself?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you deal with, Seligman talks about it in Learned Optimism. And again, you can see the notes on that one and check out the book. It's awesome. He talks about the fact that reality is what it is. We don't do ourselves any good to deny what is, especially if it's something as obvious as the weather. Now, some things we think are reality, and it's really our perception of it, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to challenge our perception of things. But the idea that it's raining and I had plans to do things outside, therefore I'm going to have a bad day, is an external locus of control. It's raining. Okay, it's raining. Then the question is, how do I make this a great thing? And how do I create a great day even though what I wanted didn't come to fruition? That's an internal locus of control. I'm not giving up my control.
You're still in the driver's seat no matter what.
Yeah, I'm in the and it's, I'm not going to deny that it's raining, but I'm also not going to let that influence whether I have a good day or not.
Okay. It,
versus, you can imagine the person who's just going to bitch about that and then bitch about it and bitch about it and bitch about it and bitch about it for days and weeks on end. That would be an external locus of control. And it's just, that's helplessness. And that's disempowerment. It's the lowest place you can operate on an emotional scale.
Got it. And so gratitude practice, and then watch your language. Watch if you're letting external stuff actually drive you. Is that what you're saying? Like, how could a guy just to kind of get the fundamentals around that?
Yeah. So then what Seligman talks about is he differentiates affirmations and positive self-talk, which he has a more negative opinion on than I do. I think they're great. But he's just trying to differentiate that. And like what you're talking about is it's raining. It's not raining. It's not raining. It's not raining. Or it's sunny. It's sunny. It's sunny. Well, we can repeat that as many times as we want. It doesn't change the fact that it's raining. Right.
Yeah.
So he talks about what he calls explanatory styles. And the idea is that when something negative happens or something positive happens, a pessimist will interpret it differently. They'll explain it differently than an optimist. So he's all about cognitive therapy. And it's not just slapping a smiley face over a bad situation. He says, like, putting icing on a burnt cake. That doesn't do much, you know? Like, we want to get in and learn how to cook a good cake, right? And then put great icing on top of it.
Right.
So he talks about actually getting in and changing the way you think and the way you explain things to yourself. And to really quickly go through that, imagine that your boss yells at you, right?
Okay.
So a pessimist will look at that and will think on three different domains. They'll think that it's three P's, Seligman says. They'll think it's permanent, that the boss is always going to yell at them. They'll think it's pervasive, and that the fact that the boss yelled at them means it's they're bad in all domains of their life. It's pervasive. It's not just at work, right?
Right.
And they'll take it personally. They won't think the boss might have had a bad day. They'll think that it's because they're a loser, basically.
Right.
So that's how a pessimist would deal with a negative event. An optimist, the boss yells at them, they wouldn't think that it's permanent. They'd think that it's temporary, right? Mm-hmm. The negative event is temporary. I'm explaining it differently than the pessimist. They wouldn't think that it's pervasive and think that they're also a terrible father and a terrible athlete, right? They'll think that it's specific to this event and not only to their job, but to this particular event, right?
Got it.
And they're more, so it won't be pervasive. Does that make sense? It's specific.
Yep. Yep.
And then they'll think that it has a lot to do with the boss. They won't take it personally. You know what I mean? Maybe the boss is having a bad day.
But that's not the same as being a, I want to clarify there, because that could be one of the places like, you could get victim-y, right? It's like, well, that's him. It's not me. Help me understand that. Because there's a part in there where you take responsibility for your part, but you don't get lost in it, right?
Yeah, and I appreciate the distinction, because this is actually the area where it's most slippery. And I think as Seligman's evolved, this is the one area where he does exactly what you're just talking about. Of course, you take personal responsibility for your own part of it. And you're also able to see that it's a dynamic in a relationship, and that someone else is involved in that dynamic who may have issues going on that may be influencing how they're experiencing you. You know what I mean?
Got it.
So, yeah, it's a more subtle thing, but
I've got a part in this, and you know what? He's got a part in this too, like being able to kind of suss that out, and it's not all me or it's not all him kind of thing.
Okay. Exactly. So then that's the negative event. The positive event is interesting too. So a pessimist looks at a positive event, like let's say the boss praises them, right? If a positive event happens, the pessimist who thought that it was permanent for the negative event thinks the compliment is very temporary. It won't last, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they think that they don't think that it's pervasive. They think that it's very specific to this one particular episode. They don't take the positivity and extend it across their life, only the negativity. And they think that it has nothing to do with them. The boss must be having a good day.
Mm-hmm.
So they do the exact opposite. Now, that's a very unhealthy way to function, right? So this idea of explanatory styles is awesome, and to see how we can learn optimism to explain our reality differently and more highly appropriately for a healthy lifestyle. And then to close the loop, the optimist looks at the compliment and says, awesome, this is how it's going to be. You know, it's going to be permanent, not temporary. They think it's pervasive. Yeah, this is just another sign that I'm rocking, right? And they take responsibility for it and take it personally of, yeah, I'm a good person. I'm worthy of this praise.
They're able to
receive it. So it's just it's a cool thing. And he goes into the science of it again. And I actually love it because it's about cognitively changing your systems of thinking or changing your cognition rather than just kind of slapping the smiley face on it.
Yeah.
So Learned Optimism, another really cool book.
I love that a guy can actually learn how to be optimistic, that if he's, you know, gotten beat up and we've all had some bumps along the road, doesn't mean it's always got to stay that way. We can actually learn how to change our view of things and our response. And I'm curious, for the guy that's sitting out there right now, as Brian was describing that, which one did you identify with more, the pessimist or the optimist? Think about that. What's possible for you now that you know that you can, if you were in the pessimist category, possibly move over into the optimist category. So
one other really cool thing, just hitting again on just the choice. We always have the choice of how we respond to our world. That's so big. I want to plant another seed. There's a book called The Gifted Adult, which is just awesome. The subtitle is A Revolutionary Guide for Liberating Everyday Genius. And she talks about motivated kids and who are really bright and what happens to them, right? And how do we fit into society? And it was one of the most transformative books I've read. And this idea that, you know, we all have genius within us, and how do we express that? And the fact that we're qualitatively different, those of us who have kind of been touched with this sense of meaning and purpose and ambition, and perhaps a qualitatively different level than a lot of other people we find ourselves around. The Gifted Adult is an awesome book that I highly recommend. And
beautiful.
Again, I got a note on that you can check out.
All right. Excellent. Man, every time I talk to you, like when we have these talks, I feel like I'm that guy in the Matrix and like getting that thing plugged into the back of my head. And it's like, and all this like information goes flying into my body. So,
well, we just went particularly off today, dude. We just covered, literally, we could have talked for weeks about any one of those ideas.
I know. It's fantastic. And the whole thing is like, guys, go out there, check the stuff out. Dive in. If you heard something in there, that because we talked like about four or five books, all the notes are on Philosopher's Notes. Go dive in and find out those things and then develop some practices around this. Talk to some other guys. Get a coach. Say, hey, you want to dive into this thing? Help me develop some practices so I can actually make these changes permanent in my life.
Well, I just want to thank you too, because I, you know, in our last conversation had a bunch of your listeners subscribe and we traded some emails. Just cool dudes. So I'm just fired up to have that exchange and to really appreciate what you're doing, what you're putting out in the world. It's awesome. And to be able to have these conversations is inspiring for me. So
thank you.
Pretty fun.
Thank you. I'm glad that my listeners were going over to check you out, because I go over there. I'm always, you know, oh, what's this? Oh, cool. What's that? And it's a great way to start the morning too, just to have a breakfast and read a note, and like it sets the tone for the day. So Well, that's a perfect segue. Let's talk about what is going on over at Philosopher's Notes.
Well, I'm diligently and patiently and persistently creating note after note, getting to 100. So I'm not sure where I was last time we chatted, but I'm on 87 now. I was in the 40s. That's amazing.
So I'm
in the late 80s now. I'll be in 100 by the time this comes to, we put this one out, I think.
Okay.
And just really excited just to kind of, again, get to completion. I've been working on this now for a year and a half, and I'll get my master's en route to the PhD that I'm giving myself when I get the first 100 done and when I've created a profitable business doing it. Because as you know, I'm all about, it's not about talking about these things, it's about demonstrating the truths. You know, and the idea that the world needs demonstration more than it needs instruction and more than it needs conversation. You know, we need to actually embody these truths. So I'm just really inspired to, and kind of humbled actually just by how much wisdom is out there, and how I can more and more authentically integrate these truths into my life and have fun getting paid to do it, you know?
Yeah, and for the guy out there that maybe didn't catch the last show, Philosopher's Notes is this awesome website that Brian has set up where he's going through 100 books, and they're all amazing books, and he's jotting down the big ideas in each one, and it comes out in the form, and help me out here, Brian, but it's like a 5 or 6 page PDF file. You can whiz through that and just get this amazing download very quickly, or there's an MP3 that you can listen to as well. What did I miss? Fill it in.
No, it's perfect, dude. So 6-page PDF, all of them are exactly 6 pages, and they'll have about 10 big ideas. I call, you know, when you read a great book, you underline an asterisk and fold over certain pages you want to come back to that can really change your life. I call those big ideas. And I pull out anywhere from 8 to 15 of those in any given book, and then I riff on them. Then I talk about, okay, this is cool. How do we apply it to our lives? And who else says the same thing? Right.
Right.
And then so you get that in a 6-page PDF and about a 20 to 25 minute MP3. And I've been really inspired. The people seem to love the MP3 the most because they can listen to it on the way to work when they're working out. You know, people are actually looking forward to both now, their workouts and their commutes.
Cool.
So that's really inspired by I've literally gotten hundreds of emails from people, you know, from a simple thank you to just an awesome, really connecting email about how it's transforming their life. And my intention is to introduce people to some of my favorite teachers, from the classics to the modern positive psychologists and everybody in between, and help people figure out their truth. You know, it's not about another guru who's telling you this is the way to live, but about, hey, this is what all the different teachers have to say in different ways. What resonates with you? And at what point are you going to start living it? You know,
yeah.
And kind of that fun, playful, smart, inspiring and empowering. And ultimately, just kind of let's go out there and really create our ideal lives, you know, and serve ourselves and serve our families and serve our communities and worlds to the extent that we really feel inspired to do. So that's...
Yeah, it's wonderful. When I read these, like, you challenge the reader. And we actually get to download you. Like, there's this thing of, like, here's what's really cool about it. Here's what this guy's doing. I actually get to experience you, the way we were talking about earlier in the show. You'll take a book that's actually might be pretty dry and hard to get through and give it so much juice and like net it out. Like, here's the really big ideas that you can take away. And you actually have like, hey, fill this out. What are your 5 big things here? What's this and that? How are you going to do this in the world? And it's always challenging to me. Like, wow, how would I do that in the world? It gets the ball rolling. And I get that it's all about like actually embodying this stuff and living it in your life.
That's awesome. I mean, they say that people study what they need to learn, you know, and they share, they teach what they're learning. And this is, I'm challenging myself. You know, I'm committed to these ideals, and there's a reason why I pull out these particular ideas. It's because that's the edge I'm playing at, you know, and this is what's so fun for me is to honor the challenge, you know, to like have fun playing it. And then to see my life shaping up the way it is. And it's taken me over a decade, you know, to get to a point where I'm really finding a rhythm, you know, and a harmony of, wow, this is what happens when I live these truths and not pretending that it's easy and not pretending that I don't still have all of the same challenges, you know, but honoring it. And also realizing that anybody can do this. You know, I come from my blue collar, first generation college student, no money background, you know, with no clue, no consciousness about what I wanted to do, and just slowly and steadily building my ideal life and just kind of breaking the myth that you need to be perfect to have an awesome life or somehow blessed or whatever, you know? So again, demonstrating the truth really inspires me. And then I have fun to go through Nietzsche, who I avoided forever, and to realize the dude was an inspired guy. He was just ridiculously smart and wrote in his style that makes it a little more challenging to get through.
Yeah.
But you really feel into Nietzsche and you're like, holy shit, this guy was on fire. He makes me look like I'm like some timid little, you know, bashful guy when you read his stuff. So it's fun to translate that into the 21st century, you know, and particularly inspired to inspire guys, you know?
Yeah, that's the whole point of this show, is to take, there's so much wisdom, there's so much knowledge, there's all this stuff that's already out there. As you said, there's no need for a new guru. It's really about taking what's already there and translating it into a language and a vibe that people can get to easily, because we need this stuff. And it's a lot to ask for some people to make that stretch to start, you know, to go read this stuff or to go pull down these books and basically do what you've done. You're doing a huge service here.
I question it, you know, the whole, I want to inspire millions of people. Is that, where does that come from?
Yeah.
But it doesn't go away. So I'm going to have fun with that as a flow goal, you know, and align my gifts to that. And that's the intention. That's the goal. And just stoked. And this is the first of what I'm going to do, God willing, over decades, you know. So really excited about it and really appreciate your support, man, in all fronts.
Absolutely. You're so welcome. Glad to help you in any way.
Always enjoy our chats and stoked about what you're doing and excited to play together in the years and decades ahead, bro.
All right, let's do this. Here are the juicy nuggets from this episode. Number one, consider where you focus your energy and thoughts. Are you spending your time being drained or are you being invigorated? Make a list of the things that deplete you and orient more of your focus and energy on the things that strengthen you. I dare you. Number two, pleasure is not sustainable and enjoyment builds on itself. So a full-on bender with the boys that leaves you in the gutter for a few days is in the pleasure category. Nothing wrong with it, but it's good to note when you are doing things that bring you enjoyment. And that means you feel strengthened and empowered by the activity. Learn to tell the difference between the two. Number three, here it is again. You've gotta have a regular fitness thing going. Brian is saying that we don't stand a chance to have even an average level of happiness without taking care of our bodies. Do a little something every day and you'll be well on your way to feeling better about your time on this rock. Number four, quit your bitching. Seriously, maintaining a habit of negativity is the fast lane to feeling like crap. Be proactive, give up the victim position, and set your sights on seeing the glass half full. Life will continue to throw you challenges, and you have a choice as to how you respond. How you choose to view these life challenges is so freaking huge. Keep seeing the glass half empty, and you'll experience it as such. Number five, studies show that starting a weekly gratitude journal will increase your level of happiness by 25%. Think about that. Taking the time, I mean only once a week, to write down what you feel fortunate to have will make a significant shift in how you experience your life. I'll say that again, once a week. Now, I challenge you to spend 2 minutes a day counting off 10 things that are great in your life. Use your fingers. And if you want extra points, use your toes. Do it. And number six, there's a ton of great practical information on positive psychology available at philosophersnotes.com/the new man. Be sure to check out the notes for the book, The Hows of Happiness, and you might as well just pick up the book too. It's awesome. Brian has an amazing deal happening at philosophersnotes.com/the new man. I paid for it. I'm a member, and I highly recommend you do the same. Check out triplanier.com to see a free video that will help you avoid the top three mistakes all guys make, and then take a second to become a fan of The New Man on Facebook. Thanks for listening.